This is Kathy coming to you with the first half of the News Gazette for Friday, July the 11th. Looking at the front page, first headline is "The Third Portable Classroom Added at Junior High" by Dave Hinton. As work progresses on the 25-26 school year at Mohammed Seymour District, an additional portable classroom building has been brought in at the junior high to help address overcrowding. Additional security measures will also be added at the junior high front entrance. Principal Nathan Mills said enrollment is projected at 825 students. The incoming class is a little bigger than the class we sent to high school of 815, Mills said. The other piece is with the move-ins. That number will keep going up. Superintendent Kenny Lee said the portable classroom building will be the third at the school. Like the other two, it will hold two classrooms and will be located south of the other portables. Overcrowding in the district has been well documented. In November, voters turned down a proposed tax increase to fund construction programs to help relieve the conditions. It marked the third defeat for such a measure. In the latest referendum, voters were asked whether the school board should issue $112.8 million in 20-year bonds to build a new junior high and new second and third grade building and make renovations to Lincoln Trail Elementary School. District teachers have said both the junior high and the Lincoln Trail are extremely crowded. After the fall defeat, ideas floated to handle the overcrowding, including implementing double shifts, the use of mobile carts, and additional portable classrooms. Mobile carts have teachers move from classroom to classroom as opposed to having a dedicated room all day. Last fall, Lee said portable classrooms came with costs beyond the $1,000 a month to lease them, such as site work, electrical and concrete work, and fitting the building with technology. He said it took $100,000 to prep the first portable at the junior high. He said personnel are keeping a positive attitude. Our administrators and our staff are resilient, and they recognize we have a space issue, Lee said, and they don't let that get in the way of learning. This story contains original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you are not a subscriber, please consider becoming one. The News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support. Other work includes a secure entrance at the junior high's front door area. We're moving a reception area and office and conference room to the front, Lee said. In front of the front doors, we will have a buzz-in system and a dedicated vestibule where you have to check in. Lee said the system will have buzzers and cameras and will be similar to those at Lincoln Trail and Middletown Prairie Elementaries, but a little different than at the high school. We're just excited for the school year, Lee said. Once 4th of July hits, it's all systems go in a great community. The district also has two new employees. Ding Ming Sito has started as curriculum coordinator, and Jessica Bryson is new director of communications. Sito, who has 18 years' experience in teaching, mentoring, and coaching, will support the implementation of new curriculum. A Mohammed resident with two children in the district, her most recent role was instructional coach and specialist at Edison Middle School in Champaign, where she led professional development, supported curriculum initiatives, and advanced research-based instructional practices. Bryson, also a Mohammed resident with two children, has more than a decade of experience in marketing and communications and most recently worked at 71 West, a marketing and social media agency. From Garden Hills Elementary School, CU leaders discuss solutions to gun violence by Luke Taylor. Community members and leaders came together on Thursday evening at Champaign's Garden Hills Elementary School with one goal in mind, developing plans to address gun violence in Champaign-Urbana. The meeting, hosted by the Community Safety and Justice Division of the City of Champaign's Equity and Engagement Department, saw attendees who ranged from City Council, members to concerned parents to form groups to brainstorm solutions that they presented as it came to a close. Many concepts were presented, but all groups prioritized open communication between both youth and adults about gun violence, supporting families, having community organizations and governmental units working together, and utilizing data to inform action. It's pretty powerful that we have as many people showing up, taking time out of their day to come in here and try to address things in the community, said Champaign Police Deputy Chief Greg Manzana. It's going to take everyone in the community to solve community problems. From Manzana's perspective, the main focus of any effort to prevent gun violence should be getting resources to the most vulnerable people in the community. That begins with identifying those people who are most susceptible to being victimized or to being led into committing crimes. No community has found the perfect solution, but what we can't do is throw our hands up and just be numb to it and accept that this is just the reality, because then it's just going to get worse, Manzana said. He'd like to see the community and law enforcement alike be able to be proactive rather than reactive, which would require people to keep the police informed about what they see and hear. We need to know what's going on, he said. Our justice system requires evidence, witnesses. Our authority comes from the community. The solutions, the evidence, the witnesses, those all have to come from them as well. While the meeting was hosted in Champaign in response to recent shootings that claimed the lives of two teenagers there, Urbana leaders, including Police Chief Larry Boone and Mayor Deshaun Williams, were also engaged in the group discussions. Williams highlighted the agreement across the board that connecting with youth is an important step. We've spent a lot of time talking amongst each other, as far as the adults are concerned, and we've had a number of meetings, and we still find ourselves in the same position, Williams said. I think it's time for us to tap into the ones that are actively involved. Boone said he heard a lot of suggestions he agreed with. Many of them were ideas he's heard throughout his career. Still, he had hope that action would come from the meeting. These behaviors were built over decades through. Unfortunately, decisions that were made that put people in certain spaces decades ago. Now, I'm not giving anybody a pass, Boone said. Some people know better, but there's definitely a history that has contributed to this. Williams and Boone said they have been meeting recently to discuss solutions. They're considering legislation to address certain actions that have ties to gun violence, for example, wearing ski masks. If it's 90 degrees outside, there's no reason for me to see you wearing a mask or having full-blown sweats and your hoodie on. It's not a matter of us trying to single out anyone or stereotype or anything. It's just a fact that appearance is what has caused or been the result of what we're seeing, and we have to address it. Department of Health and Human Services Administration overhauls eligibility for Head Start and other education programs. The Trump administration will restrict immigrants in the country illegally from enrolling in Head Start, a federally funded preschool program, the Department of Health and Human Services announced Thursday. The move is part of a broad effort to limit access to federal benefits for immigrants who lack legal status. People in the country illegally are largely ineligible for federal public benefits such as food stamps, student loans, and financial aid for higher education, but for decades they have been able to access some community-level programs such as Head Start and community health centers. HHS said it will reclassify these programs as federal public benefits, excluding immigrants in the country illegally from accessing them. Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said the changes were part of a larger effort to protect American citizens' interests. For too long, the government has diverted hardworking Americans' tax dollars to incentivize legal immigration, Kennedy said in a statement. Today's action changes that. It restores integrity to federal social programs, enforces the rule of law, and protects vital resources for the American people. A spokesperson for the Administration for Children and Families, which administers Head Start, said that eligibility will be determined based on the child's immigration status. Requiring proof of immigration status would likely create fear and confusion among families seeking to enroll their children, said Yasmina Vinci, executive director of the National Head Start Association. This decision undermines the fundamental commitment that the country has made to children and disregards decades of evidence that Head Start is essential to our collective future, Vinci said. The changes are part of a multi-agency announcement rescinding an interpretation of federal law dating to former President Bill Clinton's administration, which had allowed immigrants in the country illegally to access some programs. The Education Department, the Department of Agriculture, and the Department of Labor announced similar changes affecting a range of workforce development and adult education programs. The changes will affect community health centers that immigrants rely on for a wide range of services, said Shelby Gonzalez, Vice President of Immigration Policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. People depend on those policies to get cancer treatment, to get ongoing maintenance for a variety of different health needs, she said. Students in the country illegally will no longer be eligible to participate in post-secondary career and technical education programs or adult education programs. The Adult Education Department announced The department also issued a notice to grant recipients to ensure that programs receiving federal money do not provide services to immigrants without legal status. Education advocates said the decision would harm young people who have grown up in this country. At issue is the Constitution's 14th Amendment, which states, "All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States." The Trump administration says the phrase, "subject to the jurisdiction thereof," means the U.S. can deny citizenship to babies born to women in the country illegally, ending what has been seen as an intrinsic part of U.S. law for more than a century. Prior misimpressions of the citizenship clause have created a perverse incentive for illegal immigration that has negatively impacted this country's sovereignty, national security, and economic stability, the government lawyers wrote in the New Hampshire case. LaPlante, who has issued a narrow injunction in a similar case, said that while he didn't consider the government's arguments frivolous, he found them unpersuasive. He said his decision to issue an injunction was not a close call, and that deprivation of U.S. citizenship clearly amounted to an irreparable harm. "That's irreparable harm, citizenship alone," said LaPlante. "It is the greatest privilege that exists in the world." White House spokesperson Harrison Fields accused LaPlante, who was appointed by Republican President George W. Bush, of abusing class action procedures. The Trump administration will be fighting vigorously against the attempts of these rogue district court judges to impede the policies President Trump was elected to implement, he said in a statement. During Thursday's hearing, Deputy Assistant Attorney General Eric Hamilton argued that both approving a class action and issuing an injunction would be premature, given that no one other than Trump has taken action. He said doing so would mean a single court could become the end-all and be-all in reversing new federal policies, and said if anything, the injunction could be limited to New Hampshire. "Similar cases are pending from Washington to Maryland, and it's not time to panic," said Ama Frimpong, legal director at a nonprofit immigrant rights organization, CASA, which is also seeking a nationwide injunction. "No one has to move states' rights right this instant," she said. "There's different avenues through which we are all fighting, again to make sure that this executive order never actually sees the light of day." The New Hampshire plaintiffs, referred to only by pseudonyms, include a woman from Honduras who has a pending asylum application and is due to give birth to her fourth child in October. She told the court the family came to the U.S. after being targeted by gangs. "I do not want my child to live in fear and hiding. I do not want my child to be a target for immigration enforcement," she wrote. "I fear our family could be at risk of separation." Champaign Park District, leveling up facilities. An e-sports lounge may be among the new amenities at an upgraded Leonard Recreation Center, by Jaina Wiersma. An eSports lounge could be on the horizon for the Leonard Recreation Center, along with an updated space for after-school activities and day camps. Champaign Park District staff are proposing to convert a couple of offices, which are mainly used by part-time staff for an after-school and day camp programs, into the eSports space. The indoor playground, on the other hand, would be turned into a new upgraded after-school day camp programming space that houses the displaced staff as well. The proposal was presented as a discussion item at Wednesday's Park District's board meeting. Park District Executive Sarah Sandquist told the News Gazette that the board was generally supportive of the idea, but wanted more information before moving forward. "They want to see what comes back from the facility study and think a bigger picture about the entire first floor," she said. Prior to Wednesday's board meeting, Sandquist said the Park District hoped to potentially begin the project in the fall and have the new spaces ready to go for programming by January of 26. However, she later said that the facility study will be going on throughout the Park District for most of the year, meaning that the project timeline will likely be pushed back. The idea to reimagine the two spaces stems from a $325,000 donation received at the end of 2024, according to park staff. "We're really grateful for this anonymous donation and think that we can utilize it to provide some updated space for our younger participants," Sandquist said. According to a staff report, the donor specified that $300,000 was to be used for youth services development and $25,000 was for scholarships. One of the desires with the donation was to support esports development, Park District staff wrote. After touring various esports lounges and conducting both internal and external discussions, staff determined that an esports lounge would be best suited for the Leonard Recreation Center. The Park District previously experimented with esports leagues during the pandemic and saw some interest, Sanquist said. We recognize that not every teenager that comes here after school is interested in sports or playing in the open gym space, she said, so we wanted to provide another opportunity for different activities. The lounge is envisioned as being made up of two spaces, one area with computers and gaming systems and the other with comfortable seating. Sanquist added that the Park District would like to hire some facilitators for space who have experience with esports or gaming, as well as experience working with middle schoolers and teens. I think the esports lounge will be utilized by all ages, really, but we have a large group of middle schoolers that come over from Jefferson Middle School every day after school, she said. So I think that'll be the majority of users. But then outside of that, evenings on weekends, I think we'll see usage by a broader range of youth and maybe some adults. She told the News Gazette that the Park District has looked into how other districts operate similar facilities and programs, and some possibilities include a mix of reserved and open time, as well as structured leagues. Having a sign-up after school and then specific time blocks is something that I think we'll definitely be doing initially, so that we can rotate kids through, she said. As for the new day camp and after-school space, Sanquist said it will likely look similar to the current setup on the rec center's second floor, with comfortable seating and areas for different activities. Park District staff noted that the indoor playground has seen limited use. In the 6 months leading up to its closure for repairs, the playground was entered 882 times, over 177 days for an average of about 5 visits per day. During that same period, the amenity was rented out 19 times. The repairs are enough to bring it back to operational, but overall, the playground structure is at end of life, Sanquist said, adding that the repairs are needed to bring the 10-year-old fixture up to a level that's safe. And there's a picture here of a lounge, and it says Champaign Park District staff pointed to the eSports Lounge in Oak Park as one of the facilities examined when developing its own plans for an esports space. The Oak Park facility offers open hours for youth and adults, as well as tournaments and programming. The indoor playground at Leonard Recreation Center in Champaign is currently being repaired. In Danville, officials break ground on new housing project by Jennifer Bailey. Following a year when no new construction houses were built in the city, Thursday's groundbreaking to mark the start of four home projects by Taylor Construction and Design of Urbana was a momentous occasion for the community. Haley Seifert with Keller Williams, the Real Estate Center of Illinois, didn't know if this day would come to fruition when talks started less than a year ago about pushing for home construction. She said construction is expensive, but Danville needed these quality homes to be affordable for families. Thursday's excitement follows only one new home built each in 2022 and 2023 in Danville. The groundbreaking occurred at 207 West Seminary Street, west of downtown near Franklin Street and across from the Danville Art League. Taylor Construction and Design's project manager, Mitchell Lewis, said he knows how much this means for Danville's future, having lived in Vermilion County. "We're very excited about it," Lucas said. The last 5 years, Lucas started helping his brother, Wes Taylor, with his construction company. Lucas lived and went to school in Catlin, graduated from the Danville Area Community College, and worked at Watchfire Signs in Danville. Lucas now lives in Urbana, where they primarily work out of. "I spent a lot of time in Danville, so being able to see the transformations take place in Danville and to be a part of it, it's very exciting," he said. After Thursday's groundbreaking, an excavation company, J.R. Barrett Excavation, which the Taylors also own, will be coming in. Then once all the plans are approved, such as for the exterior, they could really start breaking ground with the big equipment, digging the home foundations possibly in a couple of weeks. There are plans for four single-family homes. The company likely will start on two and then the next two after that. A couple of the other nearby addresses are 402 North Franklin and 324 Oak Street. The first home will face Seminary Street and have a one-car attached garage. It will be a two-bedroom, two-bath home. The homes aren't yet sold, but officials are confident they'll sell in this market. Seifert said they were waiting on the groundbreaking to hit the ground running with advertising. However, there's been interest by multiple people already, just by word of mouth, she said. And there's a picture here of a group of people, and they all have shovels. Says Danville officials, including Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. holding the shovel, take part in Thursday's groundbreaking for the new home construction at 207 West Seminary Street in Danville. And in Champaign County Court, road rage suspect to remain in custody by Luke Taylor. A man who was allegedly caught on video firing a gun at another driver in a road rage incident Tuesday that was followed by a high-speed chase and ended in a multiple vehicle crash will be detained until trial, a judge ruled Thursday. James E. White, 62, has been charged with possession of a firearm by a repeat felony offender, armed violence, aggravated discharge of a firearm, aggravated fleeing or attempting to elude a police officer, and driving under the influence of alcohol. At Thursday morning's bond hearing, Judge Brett Olmstead said, considering the entire circumstances, there was no way to mitigate the risk White poses to the community. Champaign police were dispatched at 2:59 p.m. to the area of Bloomington Road and North Prospect in Champaign for the initial report of a road rage incident. Assistant State's Attorney Tony Lozar said that White and another driver had gotten in a verbal disagreement over vehicle movement, potentially brought about because White was driving under the influence or distracted, and the other driver threw an unidentified object at White's vehicle. Unless it was a hand grenade, the response he gave was way over the top, Olmstead said. It was completely out of control. White allegedly followed the other driver's vehicle, and once they came to a stop, got out of his vehicle holding a handgun and approached. According to witnesses and a video captured by a bystander, he lifted the weapon in the direction of the other vehicle and fired two shots before returning to his own vehicle and speeding away. Police responded quickly and, due to the witness and video, were able to find White's vehicle. Officers attempted to perform a traffic stop near First and Green Streets, and White apparently did stop initially, but then allegedly sped off at 75 miles per hour, running three red lights in 25 to 30 mile per hour zones in Campus Town. Olmstead said despite most University of Illinois students being away from campus for the summer, this is still likely the most pedestrian-dense area in Champaign County. White came to a stop at the intersection of Green Street and Lincoln Avenue in Urbana only because he ran into obstacles, namely occupied vehicles, Olmstead said. He was apparently cooperative with law enforcement from that point on, but officers allegedly found a bottle of Hennessy and a handgun fully loaded except for the two shots within reach in his vehicle. Olmstead said there could be an argument that the road rage or even briefly attempting to elude the police were due to alcohol consumption sneaking up on the defendant. However, he said that these specific circumstances were far more extreme than that, and buying the firearm and placing it in the vehicle were earlier sober decisions. In mitigation, Assistant Public Defender Anderson Winston said that White has a family and consistent job in the area, which suggests that alcohol consumption is not interrupting his work. Winston also said that while White does have a somewhat extensive criminal record, it all dates back to several years ago, and he now wants to leave that behind and focus on his family and community ties. Olmstead also said that White's more serious prior offenses are all from quite some time ago, demonstrating him leaving a criminal past behind, but one of the last misdemeanors he was convicted of was for driving under the influence. And in Danville, information on Wednesday night's shooting of teens sought by Jana Wersma. Police are seeking tips after a Wednesday night shooting left a 15-year-old victim in serious condition as of Thursday morning. Danville officers were dispatched about 11 p.m. to OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center after receiving a report about a gunshot victim who had been taken to the hospital in a personal vehicle. Officers spoke with the teen. An additional investigation led them to identify the area of Main and Plum Streets as the scene of the crime. There's limited information and evidence at this point, but what detectives do have is thanks to community cooperation, the police said. Anyone with additional information is asked to contact police at 217-431-2250. Those wishing to remain anonymous can contact Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-8477 or vccrimestoppers.org or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. The crime report from the News Gazette Courts Beat reporter Luke Taylor, and this is recent criminal activity reported by the CU Police. In Champaign, 1500 block of Kyler Drive, an individual interrupted a theft of their vehicle and officers were able to locate and arrest the suspect at 12 a.m. June 26. In the 400 block of Ginger Bend Drive, suspects stole a vehicle and fled, then later crashed the vehicle and fled from the accident at 12:40 a.m. June 27. on West Bradley Avenue and Redwood Drive. Three juveniles fled on foot from a stop, and a firearm and live ammunition were found in their flight path at 11:48 p.m. on June 27th. In the 900 block of North 4th Street, officers responded to a shots fired incident with no injuries at 7:21 p.m. June 28th. In the 2500 block of West Springfield Avenue, several subjects pointed guns at two victims at 9:09 p.m. on June 29th. Neal Street and Logan Street, a woman was sexually abused and battered by an offender at 12:45 a.m. June 30th. In the 2000 block of West Springfield Avenue, a suspect rubbed his genitals on a clerk while she wasn't looking at 5:50 p.m. July 2nd. In 1900 block of Bradley Avenue, a victim was shot during a drive-by shooting at 12:33 on July 4th. Also on the 1900 block of Bradley Avenue, officers responded to a shooting with injuries on that 1900 block at 3:13 a.m. on July 4th. East Olympian Drive and North Market Street, four women were stopped after walking away from a wrecked vehicle at 5:51 p.m. on July 4th. 1700 block of Henry Street, a man overdosed and was given Narcan at 8:51 p.m. July 4th. 700 block of South Prairie Street, a man was issued a notice to appear for using and possessing fireworks at 9:28 p.m. on July 4th. In the 200 block of Hessel Boulevard, a subject reported hearing multiple gunshots from their neighbor's residence at 2:45 a.m. Saturday. 400 block of Briar Lane, a man was found to be non-compliant during a sex offender compliance check at 1:17 p.m. Saturday. In the 1500 block of West John Street, a burglary occurred at a church at 12 a.m. Tuesday in Urbana. In the 2000 block of Philo Road, an unknown offender stole a battery from a U-Haul truck at 8 a.m. June 26. In the 1300 block of Ivanhoe Way, an unknown offender discharged a firearm in a residential area during a verbal argument at 11:10 p.m. on June 26. In the 500 block of Griggs Street, a man had sexual contact with two separate victims at 2 a.m. June 28. In the 600 block of Oakland Avenue, a man was found to be in possession of a stolen handgun without a FOID card, and he ran from police but was taken into custody at 4:50 p.m. June 28th. In the 1000 block of Fairlawn Drive, an unknown offender stole items out of a vehicle and used a stolen debit card at a restaurant at 9:30 p.m. on June 28th. On Oakland Avenue, an offender and a victim who were online acquaintances met at the offender's apartment and had consensual sex, but the offender proceeded to force further non-consensual intercourse at 10 a.m. July 1st. 900 block of East Harding Avenue, a man told another man he would kill him and brandished a knife at 5:38 p.m. July 1st. In the 800 block of Park Street, a man overdosed on heroin and received three doses of Narcan before being transported to a hospital at 2:10 a.m. July 2nd. In the 2400 block of East Main, a victim responded to a fake residential rental advertisement for an apartment posted to social media by an unknown offender who then gave money to for a deposit at 6 p.m. on July 2nd. On the 100 block of North Vine Street, an offender parked in a handicapped parking spot provided police with a fake name and was later determined to have an active warrant at 8:33 a.m. on July 3rd. In the 1300 block of Ellis Drive, a man used a woman's information without permission to illegitimately receive state-funded benefits at 2:45 p.m. on July 3rd. And that's all we have time for today. Stay tuned for Tyler reading the second half of the News Gazette in just a couple.